Good morning to you all. I got sun over here today. Every day it seems to be changing a little bit. Kind of an appropriate topic for this morning's talk is worldly winds of change. And as I'm looking around or hearing weather reports around the country, I get reports from my siblings in Minnesota and Milwaukee and La Crosse, Wisconsin, of heavy snows, and back in the Northeast, summer weather in the 70s, and then I get reports down in Kentucky and down south of tornadoes. And out here, we get gray skies, blue skies, wind, sun. So things change, and that's kind of an appropriate lead into our talk this morning. And let me just switch this over here. I'm going to begin with a poem that I've often heard and even read myself at Dharma talks and classes, called The Guest House. It's a really apt beginning for today's topic. This being human is a guest house. Every morning a new arrival. A joy, a depression, meanness. Some momentary awareness comes as an unexpected visitor. Welcome and entertain them all, even if they are a crowd of sorrows who violently sweep your home empty of its furniture. Still, treat each guest honorably. He may be clearing you out for some new delight. The dark thought, the shame, the malice. Meet them at the door, laughing, and invite them in. Be grateful for whatever comes, because each has been sent as a guide from beyond. So, change, eight worldly winds. It's normal that we all want a certain degree of stability in our lives. Maybe not completely unchangeable, like a little variety in order to keep things interesting. But we want to keep that variety pretty much on the pleasant side of things. Buddha taught a lot about change. It's the nature of the conditioned world. Things come into being due to a set of causes and conditions, and they cease when those causes and conditions are no longer present. This is the normal scheme of things. This is the way things are. Buddha also taught that suffering arises when we start insisting otherwise, when we deny this basic aspect of living in a conditioned world. So Sim's theme this month, each month we've been having a different theme. Last month it had to do with boundaries. And this month, the last of the year, will be about the eight worldly winds, sometimes called the eight vicissitudes, which I guess means changing things. I never use that word except in this context. So the eight worldly winds change. And they're in pairs, four pairs. Pleasure and pain, gain and loss, praise and blame, status and disgrace, sometimes fame and disrepute. So these pairs, we can kind of imagine in our own lives, situations where we've experienced these pairs. So the eight worldly winds are a way of framing different types of change. They're not something we have control over. They're a natural way of how things are. They're neither good nor bad. There's a seductive promise of comfort on the one hand, these, and a threat of discomfort on the other. And the different changes manifest as conditions in our lives. It manifests as sickness, aging, death, ways that we suffer. manifest in our relationships, coming and going, the joy of the coming and the pain of the going. Conditions we want leave. Conditions we don't want arise. All normal processes, all normal stuff. But if we insist on things being a certain way, we'll suffer. The Buddha talked about the eight worldly winds in a sutta called the Lokavipatti Sutta. And I'm going to read a bit of that. And this particular translation was by Tanisaro Bhikkhu. And let's see. So, you know, like most suttas, they come, you know, the Buddha is, and his disciples are, and the monks are talking amongst themselves and each other. And talking about this thing about these eight worldly winds. And so he says, interesting the words, the terminology sometimes. He refers to two different kinds of people. One kind of person is the uninstructed, run-of-the-mill person. And the other one is the well-instructed disciple of the noble ones. So for all of them, for an uninstructed, run-of-the-mill person, there arise gain, loss, status, disgrace, blame, praise, pleasure, and pain. For a well-instructed disciple of the noble ones, there also arise gain, loss, status, disgrace, praise, blame, pleasure, and pain. So what's the difference? What distinction, what distinguishing factor is there between the well-instructed disciple, the noble ones, and the uninstructed, run-of-the-mill persons? And the monks say, tell us, O blessed one, please inform us, you know, teach us here. So the Buddha says, the Blessed One said, gain arises for an uninstructed run-of-the-mill person. He, she does not reflect, gain has arisen in me. It is inconstant, stressful, and subject to change. He or she does not discern, it is as it has come to be. Loss arises, status arises, disgrace arises, blame arises, praise arises, pleasure arises. Pain arises, he does not reflect. Excuse me a second. Pain arises, he does not reflect. Pain has arisen for me. It is constant, stressful, and subject to change. He does not discern it as it has come to be. His or her mind remains consumed with the gain. Our mind remains consumed with the loss, with the status, the disgrace, the blame, the praise, the pleasure. Her mind remains consumed with the pain. She welcomes the arisen gain and rebels against the arisen loss. She welcomes the arisen status and rebels against the arisen disgrace. They welcome the arisen praise and rebel against the censure. They welcome the arisen pleasure and rebels against the arisen pain. As they thus engage in welcoming and rebelling, they are not released from birth, aging, or death, from sorrow, lamentation, pain, distress, or despair. They are not released, I tell you, from suffering and stress. Now, on the other hand, gain arises for the well-instructed disciple of the noble ones. They reflect, gain has arisen in me. It is inconstant, stressful, subject to change. They discern it as it actually is. Loss arises, status arises, disgrace, all these arise. Pain arises, they reflect. Pain has arisen for me. It is inconstant, stressful, and subject to change. He discerns it as it actually is. does not remain consumed by the gain. His mind does not remain consumed by the loss, status, disgrace, censure, and unrest. He does not welcome the arisen gain or rebel against the arisen loss. He does not rebel against the arisen status or against the arisen disgrace. He does not rebel, welcome, or rebel against the rising of any of these conditions. As he is thus abandons welcoming and rebelling, he is released from birth, aging, and death, from sorrows, lamentations, pains, distresses, and despairs. He is released, I tell you, from suffering and stress. This is the difference. This is the distinction. This is the distinguishing factor between the well-instructed disciple of noble ones and the uninstructed, run-of-the-mill person. His welcoming and rebelling are scattered, gone to their end, do not exist. Knowing the dustless, sorrowless state, he discerns rightly, has gone beyond becoming to the further shore. So the path for liberation is relating to these worldly winds in an equanimous way, either rebelling or clinging after. So, there are natural responses to these winds. You know, fear, anger, and blame are a natural conditioned response to pain, loss, blame, disgrace. We can even have these type of reactions of fear to even the thought of the loss, the anticipation of the loss, to the thought alone. On the other hand, greed, wanting more, that's the natural conditioned response to pleasure, gain, fame, and praise. Tend to cling to one, wanting one and avoiding the other. Not a good or bad, although we make it out to be. If we cling to particular conditions and insist on things being a certain way, we take normal changes personally, we're going to suffer. And this is like the suffering of the second arrow of dukkha that we perhaps heard about. So it's not only the immediate pain, immediate unpleasant condition, but the added suffering that's created by resistance of blaming, of anger, or of shame, of all the associated fears and thoughts that we might have. So how we relate to changing conditions is important. Whatever we practice in times of change conditions our mind. If we're practicing greed, blame, that conditions our mind for more greed and blame. Practicing patience, open-heartedness, that conditions our minds for patience and open-heartedness. So it's important to make these distinctions. So how does the well-instructed disciples of the Noble Ones relate to the eight worldly winds? Before I get into this too far, I want to acknowledge how difficult these winds can be. We're talking about the full range of suffering, full range of loss, full range of trauma, death, long-term disease. And you know, when I, you know, give talks like this, it can be, say, okay, well, just do this, just be mindful, just reflect on this, bring a little compassion to it. But it's more than that. For small things that might work, or stuck in traffic, oh, okay, I'm stuck in traffic, I don't have to fuss. But for larger things, larger challenges in life, these are more severe and persistent winds. So they take time. It takes courage. It takes patience in relating to the most difficult things in life. And so as I talk here and make suggestions of practice, keep that in mind that don't just do it. You may have to delve in and look a bit here and open up now and then back off. So we begin with our practice, how to relate to the worldly winds, with wise view and intention. The Buddha taught two things, often said, teaching, I teach suffering and the end of suffering. He didn't offer a strategy to seek out the good bits, the pleasant winds, and avoid all the unpleasant ones, but rather to relate to the changing conditions wisely, which means practicing the Four Noble Truths. As I mentioned, clinging to impermanent conditions leads to suffering. Letting go releases the suffering. If we invest our happiness in conditions being a certain way, we'll be disappointed. We're guaranteed to suffer. So when our main strategy in life for happiness is material gain and pleasure, there's not going to be a refuge when things fall apart. Wise view and wise intention can provide a refuge. Wise view, it has an understanding of suffering, the end of suffering, has understanding of impermanence, has understanding of how clinging to impermanent conditions lead to suffering. So that gets to be a beginning. It has an understanding about our sense of self, clinging to this notion of our sense of self. So beginning with a wise view is the first step in relating to the winds of change. And this is followed by wise intention. How do we lead our life? How do we frame our life? How do we walk down the streets? How do we navigate our day to day? And wise intention has to do with caring, compassion, wanting others to be happy, wanting ourselves to be live in peace, living our life with that intention. That's the view, that's the overriding intention and mentality that we can greet life. So with this as our primary intention, there's still plenty of room for all our other things. We can still raise a family, make a living, have creative endeavors, get involved socially, enjoy all the wonders of life. No way limits that, but it frames it for clear responding when difficulties arise. And so when material comforts end, when the winds of change cause loss, when relationships end during times of sickness or aging and death, wise view provides a foundation. We still have a refuge regardless of external conditions. So in this way, it's kind of like flying a kite. We can be tethered to our best intentions, and it's possible to move with the wind of change rather than being battered by them. Pema Chodron talks about water logic rather than rock logic. So rock logic looks for a solid, secure, once and for all landing place. Water logic is a flowing with the changes rather than trying to secure a once and for all condition. Along with right view, or following from right view and intention, is mindfulness, paying attention. This is key. Rather than just responding out of reactivity to changing conditions, they're noticed. There's pause, awareness, reflecting, bringing to mind our intention in response to the change. And it's helpful in dealing with the changes, changing to, and using meditation to begin with small things. Prepare with, preparing, you, being mindful of small ways that we grasp, small ways that we cling, small ways that we're making unhelpful responses to the winds of change can prepare us for the more difficult. By mindfully recognizing that we're experiencing a change related to gain, loss, praise, blame, and rest, we can loosen their influence on how we respond. Philip Moffitt was here a week ago. And in this regard, he says three things that he mentioned that day. First of all, be available. Mindfulness practice, being available, being mindful is the second part. And that, being available, being mindful, creates an opportunity for choice. We can consider our response to the changing conditions in light of our high-level views and intentions of not causing harm. We can recognize that change is happening. A phrase I have often heard from different teachers relating to change is just saying, oh, it's like this now. It's like this now. Gain, loss, praise, blame feels like this. We can recognize our emotional response. This is what it feels like. This is what loss feels like. This is what gain feels like. This is what praise feels like. This is what blame feels like. This is how I respond. Likewise, we can recognize our thoughts and narratives, which are associated with these changes. The things that feed it, to keep them alive, that either the thoughts that feed them in a way that's not helpful, or the thoughts that feed them in ways that are helpful. You know, often when we lose something, maybe ending of a relationship, a thought comes to mind, it's, I'll never be happy again. I'll never find another connection, that's it. There's going to be a sense of despair. Mindfulness of these thoughts, create a pause and allow us to question, is this true? Is that narrative supporting these losses, these changes? Is it supporting or is it removing the grasping and the reactivity that is causing additional suffering? So, full range of experiences in regard to change. Ultimately, the big wind of change is death. We lose everything. So it can be helpful to practice with the little losses, as I mentioned, the discomforts. Yeah, so when we're sitting in meditation, sitting quietly, we can hear a noise and feel agitated. Can we be with that? Our body is a bit uncomfortable. Can we be with that? Or do we seek out pleasant situations? We start fussing and squirming. Noticing the narratives here about how what a lousy meditator I am, or what a wonderful meditator I am. All these winds of change can be seen in small ways during our simple mindfulness meditations. Norman Fisher talks about these things as information. All our reactions to change is information. They're opportunities to learn. And when the opportunity arises, it's the knock on the door of our guest house. And we can respond. We can open up. If something can be done, there's no need to worry. If something can't be done about the situation, then too, no need to worry. So Along with mindfulness, it's helpful to widen our view. We can kind of close down and have a very narrow perspective of this has happened to me right now. So to open up, to include others, to include the nature around us, to see how we're connected and related to other beings, to understand that, like us, other beings around the world suffer. That can be liberating. It can loosen us up from a very closed view to maybe a little bit more equanimity, be able to relax, to respond in a more caring way. So curiosity can be helpful. Just notice this is information. How do I respond? Was it helpful? You reflect afterwards. Maybe I could respond differently next time. Norman Fisher also talks about imagination in this regard. We can get so caught up in a narrow view of these comings and goings that we have a hard time opening up and imagining something else. You know, one thing, he has a little story, a pretty nice story, very amazing story about a poet, a French poet that was in the resistance during World War II, Robert Desnos. And he was arrested and he was sent to concentration camp. And then they were marching. They were loading up the trucks and moving all people to, they knew where it was going. They were all going to be exterminated, killed. And he flipped it. He said, wow, rather than getting lost in the thoughts about how terrible the disaster was going to be, he flipped this whole scene. I said, what a wonderful day it is. Here we are all gathering together. I'm really looking forward to it. And he started reading the palms of people. He said, oh, look at you. You're going to have a happy life and have many children. And what happened, this is a true story, what happened is that all these other prisoners, you know, they went from, what the heck is this all about, to getting engaged with that. And it was such, you know, and then they were quite enthusiastic about their life ahead, even though they might have been doomed. The result of it was, it even threw the guards off, even the German guards. And they it was so flummoxed that they end up driving them back to their camp, and they did not die on that day. So flipping the script, having an unexpected response to circumstance, imagination can play well in responding to these winds of change. There's more to be said here. It would, yesterday, there was a day long with Susan, Lindell, and Lauren about the Brahma Viharas. And all these heart practices, you know, the kindness, compassion, sympathetic joy, equanimity, as well as patience and gratitude, all these are resources that we can nurture, that we can support, that we can encourage. So in times of difficulty, in times of change, we can bring them to mind. We can respond to our own challenges, our own losses, with compassion, caring. Ah, okay, this is suffering. It's like this now. Not pity, but just realizing that things are difficult. Yeah, I'm like others that way. We can gain compassion for others from our own suffering, our own challenges. I have a hard time imagining a bigger loss than a parent losing a child. And I've known a couple now, including one woman who lost two children in a very short period of time. You can get lost in things like that, buried. have a hard time emerging. But with proper reflection, with compassion, with seeing how we're connected with others, that we're not alone, that this is a shared human experience, these winds of change can be related to with compassion, kindness, and equanimity. So I'll leave it like that for now. Let's just sit quietly for a second. Winds of change. How do we want to relate to them? We've lost in their conditioned response, grasping, being suffering. Or we can see them as being natural, allowing their comings and goings with kindness, with our best intentions. This being human is a guest house. Every morning, a new arrival. Be grateful for whatever comes, because each has been sent as a guide from beyond. Thank you for your attention. Okay. I'd like to break us into small groups now. And as some of you know, I mean, it's an optional thing. It's certainly something to be encouraged. So you can, if you want, certainly, I hope, you feel comfortable participating. If not, you can hang out in the room and not join the breakout room, or you could just take your leave now if you prefer. So we'll be talking. I have about groups of three or four, and have a discussion about perhaps ways that you found the change difficult. And perhaps ways that you've seen or used strategies or practice in order to relate to the change. Okay. Looks like we're all back. Hopefully had a nice gathering and meeting of the mind, or exchange of thoughts and such. Anybody have anything to share, or any things that kind of struck you in the meetings that you might want to share? Yeah, Jesse.
We got a little cut off at the end, but I just wanted to thank Susan and Janet for sharing and talking to me.
Nice. Yeah. Yeah, that ending can be a bit abrupt. So they always appreciate that sharing and acknowledging the goodbyes. And I like these breakout groups. I used to always avoid them. And back at Sims, and they're meeting at St. Mark's. And okay, I'll listen to the talk, but I don't want to get into a group where I got to talk. But it's my favorite part. Yeah, just learn a lot, and it's just a little more intimate, more friendly. Right. Insightful. Yeah, Leah.
Thanks for the talk, Jerry. And I agree that the groups are great. We had a really nice discussion. And one of the things that I noticed is the difference between responding and reacting is very visceral for me. I have a very those two words bring up very different feelings. And it's really interesting to look at those words and contemplate the differences between the two. And then we also had a discussion about judgment around whether we're actually taking the time to pause and choose, and perfectionism, and, you know, really looking at when we don't pause, and then we're mindful about not pausing, not judging that, and causing more suffering around our imperfection with the practice. So that was really powerful. Equanimity is a really powerful thing to bring into the practice, because it is a practice. So,
yeah, thank you. Yeah, just acknowledging that much. I mean, it's, yeah, that pause. What a big deal. What a big thing. How often do we react without pausing? And how, and the difference between pausing and responding, it's night and day, as they say. Yeah, thank you. Sean and Bruce, you have your hand up.
Hi, everybody. I just wanted to thank you, Jerry, in your talk, for your talk and in your talk, because I'm a person who finds listening to the suttas sometimes and most of the time kind of dry and just really, I mean, just, especially this one when we're going through saying all the same thing about the noble ones. And then I'm going to have to Google, I'm going to have to Google the origin of run of the mill person. That is going to crack me up. But, yeah. You know, it's like, okay, so, you know, praise and blame, you know, all of this. Yes, it's painful, and it sounds really dry when I hear it from the suttas. And then you just said, I just want to say that this is hard. There are times when being with what we're talking about is not easy. It can be really, really difficult and really deep. So not to just pass it off, you know, oh yeah, that's praise, oh that's blame, oh that's suffering, oh, you know,
yeah,
it's real. And to have compassion for ourselves and for others that are going through these changes in life, especially if they don't have any understanding of that everything is impermanent. And I have understanding of it, but I forget that understanding. And that's what causes the suffering, is when I forget. And I think it's going to be like this always and forever. So thank you very much for bringing the human part of this into your talk.
Yeah. Well, thanks for the feedback, Sean. I appreciate that. And yeah, well said. I mean, that's it. I mean, it's practice. And it's when we start reading, it's like the first step. We start reading something, and initially it's up here. The next thing is practice with bringing it down, and then integrating, and then living from. So it gets to be a process. And this isn't helpful at all if all it is an intellectual exercise. So yeah, thanks for pointing that out, Sean. Appreciate it. Boy, we just don't have enough. I talk too much. I should have cut it off shorter. Maybe one quick, if we have somebody that wants to add one quick one here, and before I let Lauren wrap things up. Yeah, I saw a hand wave. Oh, there, Judith, yeah.
I was just going to say it's a good lesson in impermanence to be plucked out of the breakout room by the
right. Yeah, I know. That's great. That's what it's all about. Okay, now we're... Okay, let's call it good as far as that stuff, and I'll turn it over to Lauren and kind of wrap things up here.
Okay. Thank you all for being here today. We had a good discussion and good talk. And we're off on the 8 worldly winds for the month, so there's more to be learned. But this is a great launch, Jerry. Thank you so much. So if you are so moved, we appreciate Donna, and that generosity benefits the Sangha, the community, the teachers. So we appreciate it. And you can go to the SIMS website and click on the donation tab and donate to the LDLs. We have a PayPal account, which we share, or to SIMS. We appreciate that. Connecting with the time we've had, the things we've learned, the connections we've made today, feeling gratitude for that. May the merit of our practice this morning be shared by all beings, the ones we see and know every day, and may it ripple out way beyond our understanding, remembering that our work is never for ourselves alone. And I'll